Hello and welcome to the London Philharmonic Orchestra's November podcast. I'm Edward Sekerson, and this month I'll be looking at our festival exploring the life and work of a single 20th century Russian composer, Alfred Schnittke. Born in 1934 in Germany, but living for most of his life in Soviet Russia, Schnittke wrote music for theatre, concert hall and film, 66 film scores. His music is a melting pot of styles and sounds with influences from both classical Europe, from Bach, Haydn and Beethoven to Mahler, Berg and Shostakovich, and the Russian tradition of medieval and church music, as well as Mussorgsky, Tchaikovsky, Stravinsky and Shostakovich. The word polystylism was one that Schnittke all but invented. Running from the 15th of November to the 1st of December, Between Two Worlds explores Schnittke's popular and lesser-known operatic, orchestral, chamber and choral works, as well as his extensive contribution to animation, film and theatre. Concerts, film screenings, discussions and an international symposium let you choose how to approach this fascinating and actually uncategorizable composer. But don't be intimidated if you happen to be new to his bewilderingly diverse catalogue of works. Schnittke's extraordinary nose for atmosphere and theatrics really draws one in. He's definitely a bit of a Svengali. And the layout of these concerts helps too. Rather than focus entirely on music by Schnittke, works of other composers help to put him into some kind of context. His opera, for instance, The History of Dr. Faustus, is preceded by the prelude to Wagner's Parsifal. His second cello concerto is paired with Haydn's Seven Last Words. Anyway, find out more and have a good look at the programmes on the orchestra's website, www.lpo.org.uk. Vladimir Yurovsky, the London Philharmonic Orchestra's principal conductor, is the driving force behind the festival. He considers Schnittke one of the most interesting Russian composers of the late 20th century. And earlier this year, he spoke to the orchestra's digital projects manager, Alison Atkinson, about his fascination with Schnittke.
Vladimir, could you start by introducing Alfred Schnittke, the man and his music?
I should probably start with saying that Alfred Schnittke is a very rare, unique case in the history of music, maybe with the exception of George Frederick Handel, the composer who springs from one musical tradition but then becomes part of a foreign, completely different musical tradition, which considers him its own property. Schnittke is German by birth, half German, half Jewish. He grew up in Vienna. Schnittke's first language, his mother tongue, was German. And his entire upbringing, his culture, is German. But then he continued his musical education in Soviet Russia. He didn't repatriate back to Germany. He spoke an accent-free Russian. And he obviously became a part of the Russian-Soviet culture. At the same time, remaining deeply European, deeply German. And already this fact puts him in a completely unique place in the history of 20th century music, because all the references in his works are those of the Austro-Germanic culture. He permanently quotes Bach and Wagner and Mahler and Bruckner and Schoenberg and Berg. And at the same time, the language, also the musical language he speaks, is the musical language of a typically Russian-Soviet avant-garde, at some point very, very influenced by Prokofiev and Shostakovich, also by Stravinsky, later by Benjamin Britten. But still, you can't help feeling this man is an absolutely indispensable part of the Eastern European post-war culture.
What is Schnittke's music like? Where does it take its influences?
He started by writing very avant-garde, very radical, surrealist, 12-tone and 3 atonal pieces. But then already in the early 70s, he found his own language, which connects him with, on one hand side, with people like Mahler, on the other hand, with people like Charles Ives, and partially also with people like Luciano Berio. He personally called this polystylistic. It means a total freedom, the opportunity of using everything which has been created in the European culture up to date. What comes out of it is a sound world of an extreme, almost schizophrenic intensity. Schnittke's world becomes a terrifyingly precise depiction of those times in which the music was actually created, 1960s and 1970s, later 1980s. The paradoxical and hysterical, completely put upside down world of the late 20th century, with a very, very strong sense of apocalyptic anticipation.
In the festival brochure, you say that you are hoping to learn about yourself and your roots through this festival.
Schnittke was part of my childhood, part of my upbringing. I used to know him as a kid and then as a teenager. He knew my parents, and his music was sort of half half band, half allowed. Could never tell, because he was allowed to write music for film and theatre. His symphonic works were almost never performed, definitely not in Moscow or Leningrad. But there were always performers who championed his music, such as Gennady Rozhdestvensky or Natalia Gutman, Oleg Kagan, Gidon Kremer, Tatiana Gridenko, Yuri Bashmet. And it's thanks to them and their incredible energy that music by Schnittke became known in the West. So when going back to studying his works, especially those which were created in the 70s, in the time when I was still too young to know anything about the music or the world around me, I'm hoping to discover, when studying such a work as Shostakovich's Fourth Symphony, which we're also presenting this season, you discover a lot about the life and people's psyche in the Russia of the 1930s, early 1930s. When studying Schnittke's music, you inevitably discover a lot about the world and the way people felt and thought in the 60s and 70s. And that's what I'm interested in.
Staggeringly, the performance that we're going to do of the opera The History of Dr. Faustus is a British premiere. Was the choice of the Faust story as a subject for the opera just because it's a good story, or was the more, did Schnittke feel more?
Oh no, not at all. Faust was one of the main themes, mottos of his entire life, and it has found various incarnations, one of which is the ballet Peer Gynt, which he wrote for John Neumeier. And the epilogue of this ballet is going to be performed during the Schnittke Study Day. So it's not just the character of Faust, it's the whole European archetypal problem of Faust. Who is Faust to us, and how do we solve the problem of paying the debts in our personal lives? The fact that Act 3 of this opera was written before Act 1 and 2 is very interesting, because in 1983, Schnittke has started writing this opera, but he first wrote the final act and entitled it the Cantata, Faust Cantata. And in this form, the work has been performed in London several times. What has never been performed is the final version of the opera, where Act 3 has been left literally untouched, with a few additions, and the first and second act were composed. This work has only been staged so far once in Hamburg in the early 90s, and we are the first ones in this country to perform this music. So hopefully, after hearing and seeing, because it's going to be semi-staged with the help of the wonderful director Annabel Arden. So hopefully after hearing and seeing it, people will start craving for more, and then eventually we will present the entire work. I've always tried to involve as many partners as possible in our festivals. This time we are collaborating with the Royal College of Music, with their symphony orchestra. I'm going to give also a symphony concert, which would feature music by Schnittke, and where our principal viola, Alexander Zemtsov, will play the solo part. Now, the students of the Royal College of Music will be involved in the study day. They will present a whole part of it, consisting of Schnittke's music for chamber orchestras, and they will be also involved in the yellow sound. And also, we are very happy to welcome again the chamber choir of Moscow Conservatory, with their chorus master Boris Tevlin, who have years ago won a Grand Prix on the International Choral Festival with the performance of Schnittke's Concerto for the Choir, which they will perform with us, and they will also be involved in the performance of Faust.
Greek violinist Leonidas Kavakos will be Southbank Centre's Artist in Focus in late November. An extraordinary talent. At 18, he won the Sibelius competition in Helsinki and never looked back. His international career has been positively meteoric. He gives two concerts as part of the Between Two Worlds Schnittke Festival. On the 25th of November, he performs Alban Berg's ethereal and profoundly personal violin concerto in a concert that connects the sounds and influences of the Second Viennese School to Schnittke's Third Symphony. And on the 1st of December, he performs Schnittke's string trio and Tchaikovsky's piano trio in A minor, both works written in homage to another great musician. Tchaikovsky dedicated his to the pianist Nikolai Rubinstein, and Schnittke's trio was composed in memory of Alban Berg. I wasn't able to meet him for an interview, but here he shares some brief thoughts on the works he'll be performing and on his first encounters with the violin.
I was kind of born into a violin. My father himself was the son of a folk violinist. The next step that was very important and marked my life was the Christmas present I got at the age of 5, which was a violin. That was immediately my favorite toy, which I even went to bed with. Yeah, from there on, you know, the violin was a part of my life. I mean, I was not consciously playing. My father let me develop a good relation with it by just, you know, picking up the bow and just making any kind of noise on it. It did help. It did help, so people heard about me, you know, people saw me, some people saw me playing, but there was no hunger for a career. What was really important is to understand the responsibility of being an artist and of being in front of people and the music as an art and the devotion one has to give. That is what I grew up with. And so after the competition, even the ambition to have a huge kind of international presence was not even thought of at that point.
Artistic inspiration.
The way people have been inspired indirectly from certain events or certain people. This is the awareness that I was talking to you about before, that looking into the past makes us create things for the future. So, for instance, in the Lutoslavsky, which is written in memoriam to Bartok's death, we see, like in the Tchaikovsky piano trio, which is in the memory of a great artist, or the Schnittke string trio, which is an inversion of the happy birthday to you. You have, you know, you have this happy birthday. And then the Schnittke trio starts. So this is something that again, we have an inspiration of one great artist from another.
Alban Berg's Violin Concerto.
The Alban Berg, for me, is one of the cornerstones of violin repertoire. It's a piece that includes anything that one can look for in music history. It includes the Baroque, it includes the contemporary, it includes the folk, it includes the Romantic, the Impressionistic. So everything is in there. And more importantly, its program is the most fantastic thing. So that the source of inspiration is the human life and the message that the human life carries. So that the angel that suffers from all the problems, together with the composer who is also developing the health problems, and all this arrives to a point of incredible emotions. There is an explosion of emotions, and then comes "Es ist genug." That means this is enough now. The chorale from Bach, which takes us to another dimension, which is almost metaphysical.
Reviews Roundup. The orchestra has just returned from a 2-week tour of Australia, giving concerts in Perth, Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. Straight off the aeroplane, one of the players described the reactions of the critics to the orchestra's first Australian tour in 25 years.
My name is George Penniston. I'm double bass player with London Philharmonic Orchestra. We've just returned from a tour of Australia. My first time there, and the orchestra's first visit since 1985. I joined the orchestra in 1987, so unfortunately I just missed the 85 trip. And I know that certain players who went out on that trip loved Australia so much that they decided to try and get some work there and a job there. And there was a violinist in Perth that I met up with, George Appel, who actually achieved that and was with the orchestra in Perth for several years until he retired. So I was really looking forward to going, and I wasn't disappointed. It was a brilliant trip. We saw some great places, got some great weather, and some English weather as well in Sydney when it was raining, and great reviews. We started in Perth. We were given a barbecue on our first evening, and on another evening, we were invited to the home of the local double bass players, who put on a lovely dinner for us. So it's a really nice feeling and a nice welcome, not only from audiences, but from the musicians there as well. The concerts were great. I really enjoyed them. The LPO is such a listening orchestra, I think. I mean, the players have to listen all the time to get the sound that we have. And it's clear that with Vlad and with working at Glyndebourne, and playing in opera, then you do learn to listen. And I think that's one of the things that this orchestra has. And that's what someone at a reception, and they said that they felt that each member of the orchestra was listening to each other. And I think that's so true, because we have to listen very carefully when you're working with singers, as we do for 4 months of the year. And it carries on into our orchestral work. And when we go on tour, I think that strikes people, that we're able to listen. And there were occasions when Vladimir took risks, and he explained to us that he wanted to take risks at times with his conducting, and to take chances with the music, and to keep it fresh and to keep it new and alive. But that gives the music an edge, it gives it another dimension, and it keeps it fresh. And I think people notice that in the performances. They work like a single organism, breathing and moving together in response to the leadership of Jurovsky, with whom they have clearly established an excellent rapport. Yeah, that's very true. I would agree with that. From what I've just said, we listen very closely to one another, and I feel I've developed as a musician over the years I've been in the orchestra, the 20 years I've been in the orchestra. And in the Sydney Morning Herald, they said that Vladimir Rosky beat out every quaver of a silent bar at the start of the Prelude and Liebestod from Wagner's Tristan and Isolde, not because the players of the London Philharmonic are notably slow on the uptake, but as part of an overriding strategy to carefully realise the composer's precisely notated intentions. Yes, at the very beginning, the mood was set by the conductor silently beating, which is something that you wouldn't normally see, but it's so important to get the right atmosphere. From Australian stage, here's a quote. It was a dazzling performance by an ensemble of musicians who are clearly committed to the music they play and who obviously gain great enjoyment from it. Yeah. I mean, it was such a positive experience being there. It was one of the places I've always wanted to go to, as I said, and I think a lot of musicians felt the same way. And to go there with Vlad, with whom we've built up a great relationship over the years, it's a really positive time at the moment for the LPO. And to be in an exciting new place was a great experience for all of us. I think it's very unusual for orchestras, obviously because of the expense, from Europe to go over to Australia, and the hospitality was brilliant. And people came up to the stage, because the double bass players are always last to leave the stage, it seems, because we're various reasons, cleaning our instruments and so on. And members of the audience came up to us and were so enthusiastic. Well done, boys. I remember some lady couldn't stop saying to us at the basses. Yeah, it was nice. It was nice. She was clearly moved. And when you see that someone in the audience is moved in that way, that's a satisfying thing.
New recording. The November release on the London Philharmonic Orchestra's CD label is of Dvorak's Requiem, conducted by Neema Järvi. This dramatic and large-scale work was commissioned by the Birmingham Festival and first performed in 1891. Surprisingly, though, the concert in February 2009, at which this recording was made, was the LPO's first performance of the work. Well, I say surprisingly, but actually this isn't a work which has found international currency until comparatively recently. Who can say why? Nothing to do with its quality, that's for sure. Perhaps, like Dvorak's operatic masterpiece, Rusalka, which was also slow to take internationally, the tone of the Requiem is simply more sombre and elevated than the works which have made Dvorak a household name. Anyway, it's a wonderful piece, so enjoy, and I'll be back next month.